Welcome to the Globetrotter Lounge podcast, conversations with women who have found creative ways to travel more. This is episode 65, and I'm your host, Jet Set Lizette. Today I'm talking with Dr. Antoinette Harrell, renowned community activist, genealogist, and historian specializing in African American history in Louisiana. For the past two decades, she has researched peonage and modern-day slavery across 16 states. This work was featured in the Vice documentary, The Slavery Detective of the South. Over the years, Antoinette has received media attention, awards, and honors for her genealogical and historical contributions. Antoinette shares what led her to genealogy, how travel became intertwined with her family history research, and how she began helping others uncover their roots. She also talks about what peonage is, what she's doing to raise awareness about this little-known history, recommendations for researching enslaved ancestors, and tips for planning genealogy research trips. It truly was an honor to have Antoinette on the show, and our conversation was deeply meaningful and important for me personally. Just a reminder that all resources mentioned during the episode and guest information can be found in the show notes at jetsetlizette.com/episode65. Before we begin, I want to mention that this episode is sponsored by Waypoint Goods, a company that designs accessories that support and inspire travel. Their signature travel scarf with hidden zipper pocket is not only great for vacations, but also perfect for around town, allowing you to ditch your purse and pants with pockets and go hands-free. With custom-designed patterns inspired by cities around the world, each scarf has a unique story to tell. Waypoint Goods offers these incredible scarves and more. Simply visit waypointgoods.com and enter JetSet at checkout for 15% off. Okay, well, welcome, Antoinette, to the Globetrotter Lounge podcast. I really appreciate you being here today with me.
Thank you for having me as a guest as well.
Yeah, and you know, usually this show is obviously centered on travel, and I typically interview women who maybe identify as travelers, or that's kind of their main thing. And, you know, I'm bringing you on, and you're a well-known genealogist and historian. And the truth is, you know, I brought you on, and I'm so excited to have you here because I'm embarking on my own, at least 2 years of trying to do real heritage travel or DNA travel. And, you know, a great deal of it will center on my Black family's history. And I've started down this really intense path of doing a lot of genealogy. And of course, found being an adoptee, I found my biological Black father through genetic genealogy. And since, you know, it's been an amazing time of discovery, I since connected with some people who had done some genealogy work on my family lines, or at least one of them, which led straight back to slavery, of course. And I discovered that my fifth great grandmother was named Lizette, my name, which is an unusual name in the States. And I was named by my adoptive mother, who had no knowledge of, you know, we did not know about this Black family. And the Black family did not know about me, honestly. But I am named the same name as my fifth great grandmother. And so I'm really determined to find out more about her. And she was born in South Carolina, and I feel like called to find out more about her. And so in looking into how to work with slavery and genealogy and the Black experience in this country, I came across your work, and I came across this amazing, you know, video about what you've been doing. And I just felt really called to ask you to join me. And I'm just so honored to have you here. So I just want to start by asking you, what led you into doing genealogy? I'm assuming it's probably that wanting to know, kind of like I'm discovering, right? Tell me what led you into it.
It was my mom. My mom would always talk about the family history. And no matter what time of day I called her, no matter how many times a day I called her, my mother would always find a way to go back to family history. And I'm like, okay. She repeated the same things over and over. And it was like a light bulb went off in my head and said, you know what? You better start recording these things. You better start writing down what your mother's telling you, because she's trying to give you something. Unbeknown to her, that's exactly what she was doing, because years later, she had a stroke and all that information just got sort of clouded a little bit. So I'm grateful to my mom. And if it wasn't for my mom, I would have no idea of my family history because she was the only one in the family talking about it.
Wow. Okay. So that really, your mom really was what kind of oriented you to the importance of capturing and knowing your family roots, really, in history.
Yeah. She kept the oral history together, and that was the foundation for me starting to look out into other public places for information. But she was definitely the keeper of the oral history.
Okay. And when did you start doing genealogy? How long has it been?
It was 1994. It's been a while. It's been 1994. And I remember when I started to research in the public library at the time, the genealogy public library, I didn't find very much outside of the census records. That was the only thing I was able to find. But then I started to move out and start to look in other places and travel to those places where my ancestors once traveled through or lived. That was very exciting.
Yeah. So tell me about that. So you're from Louisiana, is that right?
I'm from Louisiana. My roots are very, very deeply rooted in Louisiana. I grew up in Tangipahoa Parish, which is a little town amid Louisiana. Then we moved to New Orleans. But I always had that ancestral connection to my maternal side of family because I once lived on that land. And so it meant something to me. So I would always travel back from New Orleans back to Tangipahoa Parish and surrounding areas. It took me into Mississippi. It took me to South Carolina. And my travels was just beautiful in searching for my own family history.
So, yeah, tell me about that. So as you were traveling and going to these places that your ancestors had lived, you know, what did that feel like to be there to start to discover more? What was that like for you?
I felt like I was journeying into the past and that I was chosen. My ancestors wanted someone to come back and search for them. It's like they wanted to meet me and I wanted to meet them. They had something to share with me and I wanted to learn. And so when I traveled to these different places, and it was just a spiritual journey. It's one that is very hard to explain outside of using the word spiritual, because it is a spiritual journey. It's your journey, and you're the one. No one else can take that journey for you. Other people can take it with you, but you're the one that would have to really experience what it is to be looking for your ancestors, looking for your history, and traveling all these different places and, you know, inside the courthouses, inside libraries, cemeteries, meeting people in the backwoods and just sitting down and talking with them was just been a beautiful experience.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I think so, obviously, you really felt such a connection to it that it became your work, right? Like it started, I'm assuming, because it was personal and it was your family. And how did that evolve into, you know, what you're doing now?
Because other people wanted to have that same experience with me that I experienced. And I started to conduct seminars, workshops to educate other people how to research their family history. And sometime I would take that journey with them. And it was just, it's a beautiful experience because when we look at slavery, was one of those, slavery divided our families up. In 1863, many of our ancestors walked from thousands of miles and hundreds of miles looking for their family. In 2021, I'm still searching for family that was sold on those auction blocks, you know, never to be seen again. And so that journey, I'm still on that journey. It won't end until I just can't do it anymore physically. But going back to something that you just said in your opening, that you are named after your third, is it
my fifth great-grandmother? Yeah.
Great-grandmother. That is a divine spiritual moment for you to have no connections to it. But here it is, you know, it's like she's being reincarnated to you. She wants you to go back.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. That's really what it feels like. I feel called, like I have to find out more about her and more about myself.
Yeah. If you need my help, I'm here to help.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that and offering that, because, you know, it just feels daunting, right? It feels like I'm new to this. I'm I mean, I've learned a lot by, I still am amazed that me and my friend uncovered who my biological father was. That was truly through the genetic genealogy. You know, he hadn't tested. It was all the tree building and the cousin matching and all the things we did that way. So I'm beginning to understand how it works, but it's so much work and it's fun and it's addictive. And it's, you know, I've spent many late nights uncovering things, but slavery and just the breakup of Black families makes it feel daunting, you know, just like, okay, here's a woman in my family line who has done a lot of work. She's put together this amazing book. Like, I'm so lucky, you know, I see what she's done, but she's been doing this since 1980. And even, you know, and she's no longer, I mean, I don't know what she's doing with it now. She's gotten older. She's not doing as much, but there's other parts of my lines that I'm kind of blown away. You know, how do I find out more? And so I've looked to people like you and seeing what other people have done, because I keep hearing encouragement, like, don't give up. It might take a while, but you can find out more, even with the slavery quote unquote wall. It's not really always a wall. So I don't know if you want to speak to that.
Exactly, because there are records, and I believe in the scripture that says, if you seek, you shall find. And because you want to know, you're putting it out there in the universe, you're putting it out there. And those doors are going to open for you. You just have to walk through. You have to be willing to want to go through those doors. It's a very, the way that I can explain it, your ancestors will not come to you if you don't want to know. There's an African proverb that says, not to know is bad, but not to want to know is worse. So because you want to know, they're going to guide you. They're going to guide you every step of the way. Just trust the journey.
Yeah, I feel that so strongly. Just as you're saying those words, it's just like, I am being guided, you know, and even having you respond and say, sure, I'll come on your show. I mean, that felt like a moment for me. And, you know, I do want to say, I want to also talk a little bit, I'm going to get into some questions about, you know, some of the specifics, but I want to hear a little bit about the work that you've done over the last 20 years now. You've researched peonage. Is that how you say it? Peonage?
That's you pronounced it right.
It's a word that you don't, you know, you see it and you think, okay, what does that mean? But I did watch the video that Vice put out called Slavery, the Slavery Detective of the South, and fascinated by the work that you're doing. It's also really intense. I mean, it's like, okay, so why don't you explain it? Why don't you explain what it is that you are doing with that?
When I first started researching my own family history, I learned that 1863 meant something to my family. We was freed, of course. And yes, we did. My ancestors did sign a new contract, the Freedmen Bureau contract, to become sharecroppers. But they did get out that system. A lot of newly freed Africans could not get out that system. They signed the contracts. They became sharecroppers. They worked on a place and the person who provided the seeds, the clothing, the shelter for them. At the end, they were supposed to share some of the crops that, you know, the earnings from the crops. Well, that didn't happen. A lot of the sharecroppers were told, well, next year you'll do better. This year, you know, you didn't come out ahead, so you got to work a little bit harder. And so I met over 200 people that was caught up in that system. They couldn't get out. And they had to steal away some of them through the night, steal to their own freedom. And a lot of the people who I'm talking about, they was held in that system in the 60s, 1960s. They just could not get out of that system. So that system of peonage, it was the worst in slavery. I've read some of the authors who wrote books that called it worse than slavery, because slavery, there was a vested interest to protect your chattel property. Well, slavery in the 20th century was supposed to be legal. And that's why it became so dangerous. That many people who had to steal away, some people was murdered trying to escape off these plantations. And, you know, I was so happy to research my family history. I'm thinking I'm going to find marriage records, photographs, collect oral history. But no, I had no idea that I was going to be embarking up on a territory that gave birth to a new form of slavery. And that's exactly what it was, a new form of slavery. So I found that new form of slavery to take place in 16 states, and it was several counties in Mississippi, Louisiana, and Alabama, which that is the triangle that I basically focused my attention on, is those southern states. And I felt like I stepped back into some evil world. And sometimes I even hate to think about it, because, you know, to listen to people who experience it, witness murders, lynchings, was raped, killings, and they're still alive today to talk about that. That made my research take a whole different turn. My genealogy somewhat became on the back. I put it on the back burner to raise awareness of this new form of slavery called penance.
Such important work. And, you know, I think shocking for a lot of people who just want to think that slavery was all this thing that happened way in the past, which it, you know, really wasn't that long ago. But then also that there was slavery, a form of slavery after slavery, and that it was going on as recently, you know, as the 60s and I don't know if beyond, but that there's people who were
beyond.
Okay. So people have been caught up in this.
1973 was the last reports that came into the National Archives, to the FBI, the NAACP. It was 1973, but it went way beyond 1973. There's actually people still living on plantations today.
Wow.
Never left the plantation.
So as you were doing your own research, then you started to see this reality, and then you were pulled into doing this work. So do you help families uncover this, or what is it that you're, you know, as you said, you've 16 different states. Are you traveling to these states? Are you helping people uncover the truth? What is sort of the end result?
Yeah, most of the time that I'm doing my traveling, I travel to conduct oral interviews, to document that experience of those who was in that system of penance, involuntary servitude, sharecropping. And in some cases, we found situations that were so horrible that I actually had to put that aside and help to give food and clothing and help people that was in destitute conditions. And so not only did I put the genealogy down, but I also had to put the research and the documentation of penance and sharecropping on the side, because I had people that I had to feed. I had to help them. There was no way I can go in and say, look, tell me your story, share that experience with me. And I'm looking at a person who have no food. So I put that aside and started organizing with the help of other volunteers across the United States. We started to collect U-Hauls, food and clothing and just different everyday necessities, and gave it out to those people in those isolated communities that I found.
So it led into further work of organization, community organization, bringing in food, just being of service and trying to help others who have suffered due to these structures that basically were put in place post-slavery to keep people oppressed, you know, and keep them under their thumb and having them work for them for nothing, pretty much. So this was, as I said, I watched the video about it and I was like, what? And then I looked at a lot of what the work you've done and just was so moved, impressed, but so important that you're doing this. And then I'm glad that people are like bringing your work to light. You know, there's been a lot written about you and shared about your work online. I'll be putting some links in my show notes about that. But I did want to specifically ask you about just this whole, well, this journey I'm about to embark on. And if you had any advice for people like me who may not be doing this kind of intensive research, but who are going to run into difficult discoveries like this, you know, it's not an easy thing when you realize you have slavery or peonage in your history. I know for me when, you know, I'd always assumed it as an adoptee, like, well, probably, you know, I know I have Black ancestors and I'm in the United States, so probably they were enslaved. Okay, now I know they were enslaved. And I know, you know, I come from Arkansas back to South Carolina. They were brought over to Arkansas from South Carolina as slaves. But when you see documents and records where it literally your relatives, your uncles, great, you know, great, great, great uncles are literally being left in the will, and to see that in the line where it says, like, you know, Drayton is, you know, going to go to my son along with, and literally the next line is like, along with pigs and the wagons and the tools and a quarter of my Negro property. And, you know, there's something it does to internally to read that that I wasn't prepared for. Like, I remember having terrible dreams and like having this weight. And it's one thing to know historically about slavery and to like feel, you know, the continued racism and stuff like that in the country and all of the things that go on. It's another thing to see your relative's name listed next to pigs on a will. And I just wonder if you have thoughts or advice about, like, as I'm doing this journey, it's been really amazing, but it's also at times heavy to uncover this kind of thing with your ancestors.
Yes, that part of your journey is very emotional, because you just described that to me. I was thinking about the very first time I read the succession records and the wills of my ancestors were sold. And that's when it becomes real. You know that slavery exists, but then when you really get to pinpoint your own ancestors, yes, you're going to cry. Yes, you're going to feel something. You would not be human if you didn't think about your great-great-grandmother and her little girl, or your uncle, or your grandfather, somebody being sold sometime never to see each other again. It's emotional. It is.
And how have you taken care of yourself in that?
Well, I'm going to say this. When you put your hands on the door of no return, as they will say, but there is a door of return. You don't know what you're going to find. You're pulling on this door. You want this door to open, but you're thinking about, I'm going to find new family members. I'm going to find photographs. I'm going to go and visit new family. But you never think about the dark side of that. And that dark side is the reality of slavery. What did slavery do to my family? It's personal now. And you learn about what your family went through, where they live. You want to go back to those isolated places and you want to walk that land. You know, in order to learn about your family, you have to learn about the slaveholder's family. So you have to do a double standard research. You have to research their family and your family. In order to learn about your family, you have to research their family to see, track their movement. And everywhere they moved is where you have to travel to research your family history, because perhaps somebody was left behind. Perhaps somebody died on the way there. You know, it's so many variables. And it's like a puzzle. You're putting this puzzle together, but you have to collect the pieces. And some of those pieces hurt, because you're going to find the rapes. You're going to find the lynchings. You're going to find those beatings. But when you find them in the diaries of those who owned your family, when you look in the universities, you look in the institutions where these records of these collections is held, then it becomes emotional. And there's no way to take care of yourself. You just have to go through it. You have to feel it, and you're going to feel it, because if it wasn't for that strong ancestor who survived the cotton fields and all the worst atrocities, you wouldn't be where you are today. So I hold them in high honors, because they could have killed themselves. They could have killed me. If they would have killed one ancestor line that I come through, that means generations would have been gone, never to come on this earth. So you find a way, because if they went through the worst, at least I can come home and take a hot shower. I can decide, you know, to get something refreshing to drink. When I go to bed, you have a comfortable bed to sleep in. You have air conditioners in your home. They didn't have any of that. So I am taken care of.
That's true.
And we have to think in terms of that.
It's all about perspective.
That's right.
No, I appreciate that. And in fact, I feel like the healing is in telling the stories too, like collecting the stories and telling them. I felt like that's one thing I felt like, well, I'd rather know. I mean, it's painful, but they were alive and lived through this, and I need to bring them forward. You know, there's something, their trauma lives in me in some place, and there's something about bringing it forward that feels like it's the healing aspect, you know, and honoring that they lived and walked and had to go through those things. And ultimately, yeah, we're here because of them, right? So that they survived. And So, okay, I just had to say that because that's already been my experience and I've barely gotten started, right? Where I'm like, wow, this is intense. And I know you've done intense work. So you are an inspiration to me to just like, don't give up, keep going. Like the discovery is worth it, all of it, you know? So what advice would you have for me too about, you've already mentioned a lot of places to go, you know, as I start, obviously, and I, you know, I've attended some conferences and things. So there's so much out there now, and now with the internet, like, you know, being what it is and ancestry and tree building and all these things you can do, but I know there's still something so important about going there, right? There's some records you can't get at online. You need to go and show up to like courthouses and, you know, that kind of thing. Do you have any advice? Like I'm going off to South Carolina. Where do I start? You know, what do I do?
I would advise you to learn as much as you can about the person who owned your ancestor. And you want to, if we're going to look at prior to 1870, a lot of the marriages of our ancestors was documented 1870, 1866, you may find some. But for the most part, learn everything you can about the person who owned your family. Look in their succession records. Go to the courthouse. Go to the courthouse and look at their records. And inside their records, you may find your ancestors, especially since you have a name that is so good. But I will look at succession records or probates and wills. That's exactly what I would do. And find and call the university and find out or go online and see if the family who owned your family have a collection that is reposited in the state archives or in the university. There may be finding aids online, but there may not be the complete record. So you really would have to go there. I would also find out as much as I can about my ancestor's life, who was her children, and follow that trail. Look at that last surname in the marriage records and in the courthouse. Look at land records. Anyone that has that last name that your ancestor, believe me, you may not think that it's important to copy this document, but the one thing I want to tell you, when that spirit inside of you say, this is what you need, do not question it. Do not let your logical conscience come in and say, I don't think I need that. You're guided by energy that's much bigger than you. So definitely pay attention to that voice or that intuition that's speaking to you that say, this is it. If that voice say that to you, copy that, because you will find later on that it's part of a bigger puzzle. And that has happened to me many, many times. The spiritual journey is, listen to the voice inside that says, this is the book that you need to be looking into. But do your homework before you go to South Carolina. What part of South Carolina are you going to?
Nesmith, N-E-S-M-I-T-H. It's not too far from Charleston. It's about an hour outside of Charleston. And I did meet a woman who has the same last name as Nesmith, and she said some of her family is from the brother of the man who owned. Anyway, it all goes back to the same family, slave owner family.
Okay, so you may have to end up going to Charleston. Is that where the state archives is at in Charleston?
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. I think so.
So you're going to end up going there as well. You're going to end up going there and learn as much about your fifth grandmother as you possibly can. If you find any succession records or wills or probates that list her children, especially the males, because the women got married and they didn't carry that maiden name like we carry it now. They dropped their maiden name and took on their husband's identity. So it's easier to track men in that period than it is to track women.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say spend a couple of days in the courthouse. If you go to the courthouse, start off early in the morning, 8:30, and make it a day to spend there. If you have 2 days, divide those days up. Get as much as you can out of the courthouse and then move on to Charleston to the state archives.
Okay. And, you know, I'm bringing you on the show and knowing that I'm talking specifically about how I want to do research on my enslaved ancestors, but I think all of this can apply, you know, people, even if they're not Black, you know, might be traveling or trying to figure out research and understand more about their ancestors before they do cultural heritage travel, right? So I felt like this still applies. And also uncovering difficult things. You know, when you do genealogy, I've had friends who aren't Black, but they find out a relative killed another relative, or they find out, you know, they find out difficult things, right? But it's worth taking the time to uncover. And I know for me, if I'm going to take the time to travel to where my ancestors are from, I want to do my homework before, but I also really want to make some good use of my time there and get into, you know, as much as I can. And so for me, with enslaved ancestors, yes, it's going to the courthouse. But I could imagine just in general, you know, you could drop in on a place and be like, oh, great. Okay, they lived here somewhere. I don't even know where. Well, let's see. But I would want to go to, like, where were people buried? Where did people get married, if we could find that out? You know, where were the churches?
Go into the community.
Yeah. Talk to the people in the community.
Yes. Go into the community. Ask the community, who's the oldest person in the community? I'm looking for information. And go and see that older person in that community. And I would advise you to keep a stack of thank you cards in your car with you and give thank you cards to that person. But go and see the older person and ask where the oldest church is at. Where's the oldest African-American cemetery? You know, and believe me, what we are experiencing now is that people in their 80s and 90s, we should be interviewing them every single day, because I'm finding that a lot of the younger people, and compared to somebody in their 80s and 90s in their 60s, they don't know much, because they wasn't allowed to sit around when the elders talk in the community. But go out and do that community thing. If you're going to go on a Sunday, go and talk to, you know, go visit the oldest church, because a lot of that history right there is in the church, and they may know something about that last surname. So the surname that you are looking for, definitely ask around. Have you heard of these people with this last name? Oh, sure. They live down here. You know, make it your business to go there.
Yeah. So get out and talk to people.
Yes. Talk to
people. Great advice. Great advice.
When I first started, there was not, the technology had not evolved into being what it is right now. So there was a photograph I wanted to take a picture of. At that time, I had to borrow the picture, take it and make a copy. Now you take your phone, you can take your phone, a camera, and you can take pictures instantly. And always ask people if there's something that you can make a copy of.
Excellent. Yeah, I love all these tips. Okay, I want to be mindful of time, but I wanted to say, I know, speaking of how now there's, you know, more technology, there's also a lot of really great resources. You know, we're talking specifically about Black history, Black genealogy. I know there's a lot of different organizations. Like, I know I joined the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society. I think you have Nurturing Our Roots?
Nurturing Our Roots.
Yeah. Tell me about
that. Yes, I do.
What is that? What is that platform?
Nurturing Our Roots was a television talk show on a local cable channel in New Orleans. And after the Hurricane Katrina, we went on for a couple of years. And then I started just recently the weekly broadcast. And that is to help educate people on the importance of documenting their family history for so many reasons. It's just not one. It's a lot of health issues that we can learn about in the family when we start researching our family history. And another thing that you find in small communities, cousins marry cousins unbeknown to who they are. There's a lot of different things that happens when you start researching family history. I also trace my family history back through Ancestry DNA to Niger, West Africa, on my great-grandmother's side. And I was so happy to be able to go to Niger, Africa. And for the long period of time, the longest period of time, I wore these two braids. I couldn't understand. I'm 35 years old. I'm still wearing two braids, right? I get over to Nigeria, and the first thing I saw, the women wear two braids. So I started crying immediately. And I made this collage, and not knowing it, I put my family. And I don't know why I did that to the Tuareg people, but when I got there, I said, this journey, it was guiding me all along. So I stayed with the Tuareg people for 2 weeks there. So that my journey has been from Louisiana to Niger, West Africa.
Amazing. And that's where I hope to also go during the next few years. I plan to travel to the African continent and for the first time, and hope to visit places like Benin, Ghana. And I know my DNA says, you know, Nigeria. And I just really hope to do as much as I can. But it sounds like your experience was powerful going there.
It really was. And I can say that just being with the people and learning, I had a great translator. I met one of the Tuareg men here in the U.S. in New Orleans, and he made it possible for me to meet his family. They introduced me to the governor. There was all types of welcome home ceremonies. But let me just say this. I did not want to go to Africa, to the continent of Africa, until I was able to go home. Where did my roots come from? And I did that. I went to the place where my maternal grandmother came from, but now I need to go to Angola, where my grandfather came from. And so that meant a lot to me. And, you know, the traveling has opened so many doors for me, and I became educated through that experience, something that I couldn't have gotten in a book. I had to go there. And when he took me to Zindel and he opened up the room where they held our family members as enslaved and selling them, and I saw these piles and piles of jewelry or whatever it is they had on, they opened a door, and that was a moment for me to release. I had to release it all. I had to release it. And so when the person that gave me the personal tour told me about what this room was, they took me to the auction block, they took me to the castle, they took me to all those places. So that was a fulfilled part of my journey, the complete circle. I feel like I made the complete circle.
What a gift, really, you know, to be able to do that. And that's such an inspiration for me. You know, as I said, I have that little bit of a double thing, right? Being an adoptee and growing up and not knowing my biological lines. But fortunately, being adopted by, you know, I was adopted by a white woman and a Black father. So I was able to at least connect identity-wise, but I was missing that biology piece. And now, and then having the double thing of also being African-American. So it feels like such a search, you know? For me, it's like there was a search as an adoptee and now a search because of slavery. And but it's so exciting. Like, I just have this feeling in my gut of like literally gratitude that I get to put the space in my life to really dive in, because I do feel my ancestors calling me, especially when I saw that her name was Lizette.
How was that for you? Now, you tell me, what was that moment like for you when you found that your fifth grandmother was named Lizette?
Wow. Well, I can't even tell you. I remember exactly where I was. I was sitting on my bed in my bedroom. Actually, that's where I am right now, my bedroom. And I had received, you know, through the work that me and my friend had done to find my biological father, we had been meeting people through Ancestry.com along the way. And this woman had done this Gamble family history book. And she was always happy to talk. I find that with genealogists, they're really often really happy to talk to you if you reach out. You know, they're just like so into it, right? So she was fascinated, like, okay, you're adopted and you just found this out. Okay, you know what? I have this little book. I got to send it to you, you know? So she'd made this book, sends it to me. I'm cracking it open, you know, I'm excited. She helped me understand where my biological grandfather was, some questions around who his father was. Anyway, we got that sorted out, and I crack it open. And she had told me about slave mother Mary, and that, you know, she had all this information about slave mother Mary, and that would be my fourth great grandmother. She hadn't mentioned anything about Lizette. She just talked about Mary. So I'm reading all the lines and, you know, understanding the things and the stories. And then it says, not much is known about slave mother Mary's mother. Her name was Lizette, and she came from possibly the Caribbean. And I, at that point, like, everything kind of went, I had to read it a few times, and then I almost threw the book across the room. Like, I had this real intense reaction because I couldn't understand what I was reading. I was like, it was spelled with a Z. I spelled my name with an S, but it's an unusual name in the United States. And it just, yeah, I started crying and I told my husband, I said, excuse me, you've got to see this. And I just, my story already feels big. Like I want to tell the story and write a book about finding my biological family. But that took it to another level for me. It became like,
wow,
this is crazy. I am named after someone. I mean, without, and I called my adoptive mom and told her, and she was very emotional because she had no idea. You know, I said, this is insane because my adoptive mother's French Canadian. That's why I have a French name. And so she was blown away that she had landed on that name. So at that point, I knew I would need to try to find out more about Lizette.
Lizette finds Lizette. Isn't that something, huh?
Yeah. So thanks for asking the question.
Yes, because that was a question in the back of my mind. I said, I just got to ask her, what was that moment like? And it's because I can see myself just crying and being emotional to know that how, and out of all the names, the trillions of names in the world, I end up having the same name of my fifth grandmother who I'm searching for.
Exactly. And who I didn't even know. Like, I did not know this family. I did not know if I'd ever meet them, but DNA testing made it possible. So for me, it felt like coming home to myself. You know, it felt like, and that it wasn't all like an accident or, I don't know, it just gave me this sense of connection back, which I'd never really had as an adoptee. So this was a double, you know, it was like such a confirmation, right? Like, wow, I am stepping into my own. So, and that's why I must go to South Carolina. She died in Arkansas. She was born in South Carolina, though they think she may have come through the Caribbean. They don't know. But anyway, I want to go there and try to see if I can find out anything more. So anyway, we do need to kind of wrap up. But what I wanted to ask you is, do you have any final tips or advice for people wanting to do cultural heritage or ancestral travel? Any final thoughts or advice for people wanting to do that?
My final thoughts and advice, just do it. Just do not be afraid of the unknown, because it is the unknown that keep people from doing different things, traveling. But just study the place that you want to go and not be afraid. Just make plans to go. I've always made it exciting. I took my grandkids with me at times, and we just made a journey out of it. And so just start your journey and be willing to let that journey take you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time, your wisdom, your insights, and your support in doing this. And yeah, I really appreciate having you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Globetrotter Lounge podcast. This episode was produced by my podcast manager, Marcy Page. Show notes and resource links can be found at jetsetlizette.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts and tell your friends about the show. Thanks so much for tuning in and getting some travel inspiration. Remember, life is short, travel more.